If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hey everybody, welcome to the E3 special edition of the CU podcast for Thursday, June 15th, 2017. That's Ian Ferguson.
It's me.
This is Pat Country, and we're good enough. Pat and Ian are good enough to cover E3. You know, E3, we've done an E3 special almost every year we've done the podcast, right?
We almost felt like we were obligated to. Either it fell on that week or we did one. I don't think we did one last year.
You don't think we did one last year?
I don't think so.
Just because it was just crazy or something else was going on, or we just said fuck it.
Did
anything happen in E3 last year? I don't remember. It feels like this E3 has been a lot more momentous. I don't know.
I don't feel like anything happened this E3.
But in general, though, E3 is taking a nosedive in terms of importance. We always speak about it each year. I went for 3 years in a row from 2011, 12, 13. I went, and that was it. That's all. That was good enough for me. Good enough. But anyway, we got a lot lined up. Besides that, we'll be talking about. I'm wearing a Goonies shirt. If you're not singing on the podcast, that's why I'm singing that. We'll be talking about Wolfenstein 2. Xbox One X, One Xbox X, Nintendo E3 stuff, Super Mario Odyssey. We have a call-in Q&A segment and something else special. Ian, what's been happening?
So ever since I got Friday the 13th, the game.
I got the game. I just haven't played it yet.
Well, I don't have it on the PC yet. Vonnie and I have been going back and watching all the Friday the 13th movies. So we watched 5 and 6 last night.
5 is awful.
No, see, here's the argument I'm going to make.
Okay. You like the fact that it's different?
5 is actually... Everyone says 5 is bad, and I haven't seen these movies in a long time.
It's the Halloween 3 of the franchise.
I haven't seen these movies since probably my early 20s, so let's say 15 years ago, roughly.
Okay.
Okay. My first apartment's like 19, 20, 21. And these movies used to, like, scare the shit out of me.
Absolutely.
I can't handle gore. They scared the shit out of me.
Shocktober, WPIX.
Whatever.
Was with me.
When they'd put them on, you know, in marathons, my friends would always want to watch them. And I would spend most of the time curling into the couch not watching these. So I've seen these movies, but basically I've seen the beginnings and the ends of most of these movies and spent most of the time, you know, squirming into the corner. So nowadays I can watch these things and they just don't faze me. So I'm kind of coming to grips with all these. I know the first movie front to back, and I've always enjoyed it. I like the third one more than I remember. I like the third one
a lot.
Third
one is not the sleeper of the series, but that's a pretty damn good movie.
I really like the third
is.
One. Yeah. Second one, eh. I mean, whatever. It's okay.
I like the look of the second one.
Sure.
It looked very creepy. Like the first two are like, you know, the sister movies of each other.
Yeah.
Right? Like 3 and 4 are kind of
4, which I always remembered as being good.
4 is awesome.
No, it sucks.
No, you know it's good.
No, the end is fine, but they never explain what happens to the mom. The mom just disappears.
She does.
She's gone. Yeah, she's dead. But she just wanders off and she's gone.
They don't show how it happens, but they show the she's dead. You know,
The story drives me nuts in that one, and that used to be my favorite. But after watching it, I felt like it was kind of.
Well,
what the fucky?
Well, 4 is directly comes after 3. It's supposed to be the, it was originally going to be the end of the series.
Yeah, I know that. And they got Tom Savini back, and the special effects are good. And
Crispin Glover. You got some nice nudity in there. Some of the best nudity of the series.
Lots of great nudity. But yeah. There was just something about the story, and I was like, it didn't hold up for me, or maybe I just overhyped it as we were getting up to 4.
I like the fact that it referenced itself being that the one character is trying to get revenge for his sister being killed. You had the Corey Feldman character being introduced. What the hell is his name? The guy.
Tommy Jarvis.
Tommy Jarvis character. So there was more going on than the other movies in and of itself. And plus, like I said, it was supposed to be the last one. And remember, in 4, he's still a human being. He's still a regular guy that can be killed. I don't know how they put him in the morgue without knowing he wasn't dead. That aside, but the gore effects are fantastic in 4. Like,
they are.
Some of the stuff they do is insane if you're into that.
But no, I thought 5 was a pretty interesting...
For what it was.
A pretty interesting movie. 5 was...
The middle point of the series. Almost literally and figuratively, and it kind of bookends two different
types of
movies.
It only becomes awful in the shadow of 6.
Okay.
Because 6 is... And 6 is the one I remember the most.
6 is where the series really got super popular. That's where you have zombie Jason come alive.
It's a super poppy movie, too. It's very jokey. A lot of the deaths are even...
That's when the series became, quote-unquote, mainstream popular.
Yes.
That's when you see Jason appear in Arsenio Hall, for example. Like when that and Freddy Krueger, both in the late 80s, were getting big at the same time, people first talking about crossover, was with Part 6. Part 6, 7, 8 were the three, like, wow, this is Jason in his zenith, so to speak.
And I it was just weird for me comparing them because it's like either one of these could have been, either 5 or 6 could have been a diverging point, and 5 would have probably taken it down a more horror path.
Like that Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2 where like it gets transferred between different people. No one ever talks about that one because it's like weird and experimental.
And then 6 takes it more into the mainstream. So it was just an interesting... It was an interesting double of movies to watch last night.
You can see the progression and change. See, that's the thing. I prefer 4 to 6. I don't like Zombie Jason. It's not as interesting to me a story as just the human being that's IQ of 50 going around killing people because his mom got... That to me is an interesting, more interesting story before it becomes a zombie, at least to me personally.
No, and that's the thing. I love the idea of 4, and I love the idea of parts 1, 2, 3, and 4 as a whole. I guess just when I had sat back down to watch 4 again... I'd maybe overhyped it, or I had things that I had overlooked annoyed me. Anyways,
okay,
that's
let's move
basically
on.
Its own segment. So
well, yeah,
let's go.
Well, we're going to do an intro segment now, uploaded because real quick, we have two other things to talk about. First, we're going to talk about Ian. Unfortunately, in his absence, we had a lot of stuff build up and sort of like letters from people, and thank you so much for those and gifts. And we've unwrapped some of the podcast quick. We have a few here that we try to catch up on. Ian's got a postcard, and I have. A letter here as well. First, we'll show this we got from Fox. Fox, who's overseas, he's usually around Japan. Looks like Pat just got back to Seoul from Iwakuni. I don't know where that is. I know Seoul's in Korea. Iwakuni, I don't know where that is. I picked up some neat stuff for you. So he got us a bunch of stuff, and this is like great stuff. This is fantastic. This is the Samurai Taisho Darth Vader. And there's the Iron Man.
Iron Man.
Yeah, these aren't cheap. These are really cool to find these for us.
Awesome.
This is. At first, I'm like, oh, I didn't know this existed, but no, it's licensed. The movie realization, and you know, thank you so much, Fox, for this stuff. And he communicates with us. He's going on his way to try to find goodies for us in Asia. And then, Ian, you have a postcard there.
From Jennifer McMiler, just saying, I have always loved your podcasts and the great reviews. Keep up with the awesome job, and I hope Ian feels better soon. Thanks, Jennifer.
And it's on a Pikmin art.
Yeah, it's a little Pikmin card, and it's really cute.
And then finally, this one I felt the worst about because at first I didn't see it in my P.O. box. It's from William. He's from Ohio, about 45 minutes from Pittsburgh. Just want to say hello. I listen to the podcast every day. Also love Flea Market Madness and Pat the NES Punk videos. I included the Game Boy game. I doubt it's anything special, but I sold off most of my retro games because they were just collecting dust. So this letter was ripped open when I got it, unfortunately. So the Game Boy game, I have to see if I found it or if it fell with something else, but I don't remember seeing it. But the return address was ripped off entirely. So I don't know where it came from, but he wanted us to sign. The picture was in there, a little picture of us from happier times in the podcast. Ian a little younger, hair a little bit shorter. Pat laughing. So we did sign this for you, William. And he said he wanted to put this next to his Mel Gibson and Cyndi Lauper autographs. That's a motley crew of autographs right there. I respect and like both those
Cyndi
people.
Cyndi Lauper, that's
They're both
fantastic.
Great artists. Yeah. Goonies are good enough. But anyway, so if you want to email me, William, and so I know who you are, tell me your address so I can match it to the town here, so I'll know exactly what town you're from, so then we'll match it with your street address so I can mail this back to you at some point. And there you go. One other thing real quick, that was alerted yesterday, the passing of Keith Robinson.
Yeah, that's
from,
a bummer.
From Intellivision. Keith was a programmer in Intellivision, then basically took over the namesake and the properties afterwards, and helped keep Intellivision alive in the public eye.
Did good things with it, made sure that the people could experience in television the games. He put out great collections on the PS2.
Intellivision Lives.
Intellivision
it was also
Lives.
On Xbox and also
and Xbox,
GameCube.
PS2. I don't believe it ever had a GameCube version, but he really loved that he wanted the developers to get all the credit. He made sure developers got credits for each of the games that were on there, and there was little developer stories for each of the games that were on there, too. So he wanted to make sure everyone involved in television got their due. He very much loved that part of his life in that company.
Well, what's important also is that was one of the earliest parts of game preservation we saw, you know, in the 90s when you had, like, Intellivision Lives and the Atari version of those. I remember first seeing stuff like that, like, on the computer, like, in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And then they come to consoles. It's very important to get that going again, you know, sort of the first mainstream, quote-unquote, retro gaming, you know, that you could purchase as a consumer. This is before all the flashbacks, even. So, and Keith was great to appear in the Video Game Years. I did not do that interview. John did that interview. And that was at, I think, Classic Game Expo 2012. I did meet the man, though. I had a chance to meet him at some conventions. Very nice guy. Talk everyone's ear off. I remember at Game On Expo a couple years ago, I'm waiting to go on afterwards, and he's, like, going into, like, basically when my time started. I'm, like, looking like, I'm like, Keith. He loves telling the stories back in the day. So here's to raise your glass to Keith Robinson. Did a lot for the retro gaming community and just all-around good fellow. So, Ian, E3.
Yeah.
We'll start with the Xbox One X, which was Project Scorpio, which is not the Xbox One S, which is not the Xbox One. So the One S was the upgrade to the One, which basically gave it HDR. Not 4K total compatibility, but HDR.
And 4K streaming.
4K
and movie watching.
Movie watching, but not game watching. So the One X gets you to the point where it's 4K gaming.
Oh, man. Okay, so the Xbox One X is the most powerful gaming console
ever
in the world!
For right now, until 2 months later where Sony announces something.
Something. Yeah, I mean, not...
Let's talk about that real quick. Should that matter in this day and age anymore? Because technically, when most of consoles come out the past 30 years, at the time, they were the most powerful console ever.
No.
At one point, Intellivision was the most powerful console ever.
I find the whole marketing aspect of this thing to be very oddly 90s you have just witnessed the most powerful video game console ever, like, you know, shit that they had all around E3. Mm-hmm. And also, I can't remember which video it is. I think it's the one that's during the, I think it was the one during the conference, but it, like, literally shows, like, a woman holding a controller, and, like, it pans up from underneath the controller, and, like, a light comes on or something, and it shows her hair blow back.
Really? So we're talking, like, really 90s audio,
yeah.
Almost like,
like, what?
Commercials.
What the shit? Like, and that's what the basic pitch for the Xbox One X, which is a very dumb, confusing name, revolves around. And I think that's what made Microsoft's press conference in general so lackluster to me, is that they focused on this more powerful console again after last year with another
One S.
With the One S, and still not a whole lot of exclusive games, a few, but it's...
Well, there's less and less with everything going to Windows 10 in the future anyway.
Right.
So...
And a lot of things are having timed exclusive windows, and it just I don't know what Microsoft's trying at here by releasing a more powerful console to play
the same games.
The same games or less games or the it doesn't.
Well, they're not going to throw out the people that only have an Xbox.
Right. Obviously.
Like we said before, the generations are gone. We said that for a year or two.
Yeah.
This is it. They're gone now. When you have three consoles in 4 years, 2013, 2016 with the 1S, and now what is coming out later this year?
Yeah.
November.
For $500.
And
it adds, basically, okay, so you look at a comparative chart of features between Xbox One X and Xbox One S. Clever, guys. That's not going to be annoying. And here are, and I'll tell you, I have a little bit of shop humor annoyance that's going to drive me fucking crazy here.
Can we talk about teraflops, Ian?
No.
That's important. Teraflops.
So, features. Immersive true 4K gaming on Xbox One X, but not on Xbox One S. Super sampling means even new 4K games will look great on a 1080p screen. 40% more power than any other console with the Scorpio engine. 4K textures and assets with 12 gigabytes of GDDR5 memory. Record clips in 4K resolution at 60 frames per second. Everything else under that line, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it's like 15 other bullet points, are the same between the Xbox One S and the Xbox One X.
Except for $200 more.
$250 more.
Is it $250 you can get an S now for?
Yeah, S is okay. $249. So really, it's 4K gaming is what it's offering you.
You get teraflops.
And you do get some enhanced... And it will max out the performance on certain games. So
okay, let's back up a second. They're going to try to sell upscaling in reverse. So if I have a 1080p TV, they're telling me the game's going to look better graphically on running on this. Somehow, there's gonna be a better resolution. That's what you just quoted me.
Yes, super sampling.
That makes no fucking sense. The resolution cannot be greater than the screen it's outputted on, unless they're gonna do some magic tricks in the renderer with the extra horsepower. That's different than saying your game's gonna be a better resolution on a worse output screen. That's just marketing bullshit.
We're all about 4K, as you know. Microsoft's more said.
Mail me a 4K TV then.
Near the kickoff of my demo, he pointed out that this is Kotaku, I guess. He pulled up a still shot of the 8 million pixels that can fit into a 4K image, compared to the 2 million pixels you can see on an HDTV running a game in 1080p. Yep, it was definitely four times as many pixels. Xbox One X Xbox One X will do super sampling for people who connect the machine to a non-4K TV, which they say will crunch those 8 million pixels into something that will still look better than 1080p.
Okay, like I said, maybe it'll be a higher ultra render at 1080p, but it's still going to be fucking 1080p. Everyone, go online and look at those scales they have of viewing distance versus TV size and resolution, and you'll see at what point having 4K actually matters at both screen size and distance. And I'm going to just say 90% of people, it's not going to fucking matter. If your TV's 20 feet away, it's not going to fucking matter.
I feel like Microsoft is fleecing its fan base here.
You think?
Yeah.
You think?
Yes. They have.
You think?
They don't have anything to go on. They don't have a strong set of exclusive titles to go on.
They've seeded that, saying that in the future, you can just basically buy the Xbox One game and play it on your computer.
So they're just releasing these upgrades and hoping people buy them. I mean, the Xbox One S was, what, $300 or $400 at launch? Now the Xbox One X, like, a year and a half later, is it? 2 years later? Is 500.
1S was August of last year, so we're talking a year and a half between 1S and 1X.
It's crazy.
It's insane. If I bought a 1S, I'd be like, what the fuck? You know, like, I could have just waited. If I had the X, and then, first of all, yeah, if anyone had both the Xbox One regular, and then the S, and then the X, I don't know who's spending $1,500 to get all three when they first launch. You know, that's insane.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's... And this article says it, but it's an opinion that I kind of came to. All I think the Xbox One X did...
Teraflops.
At a $500 price point is make the Xbox One S more attractive.
I can see that.
if you want an Xbox console right now and you're looking at this, especially if you don't have a 4K TV,
you know, there's no reason to get a regular Xbox One anymore. There's no point. Right?
There's no point. And
do you even buy those brand new anymore?
No, probably. I don't think you can. So, I mean, why spend $500?
Well, you spend $250.
The price.
They claim they weren't making money at a $500 price point, Microsoft.
No, they probably, I mean, maybe they're not.
Not at the start. Maybe in scale down the line they will be. So what is the real strategy? They just want to say, because they still haven't caught up to the PS4 in terms of sales, right?
No.
So this is just saying, we have the most powerful console ever. This is the hardcore gaming console. Games, who the fuck cares? We have no games that you can't get elsewhere, right?
I guess.
And that's where we're at?
Sure.
Teraflops.
Lest anyone think, I mean, what are we going to next? Oh, well.
Backwards compatibility, Ian, with OG Xbox games.
That's actually kind of cool, but.
But it's not every Xbox game. It's like the 360 deal certain titles will come out, but they've already said that it's going to be less titles than 360. So they're going to pick and choose which ones because of licensing deals, for example. So it's not an emulator, really, at the end of the day, then. That, like, they're not going to allow you to get any regular Xbox disc and throw it in and play it.
They're going to handle it the same way that they're handling the 360 now. The 360 backwards compatibility, as far as I can tell. Backwards compatibility, it depends on how you look at it. I'm not going to be a huge poo-pooer on this. It's a great...
It's a bonus.
It's a great bonus for certain
Xbox
people. Depending on how you want to look at it, for me... And I said this, it's the reason why I got rid of my 80-gigabyte PS3, so this is not me just shitting on Microsoft. If backwards compatibility is not very close to 99 or 100%, and I have to pull out an old console to play some weird shit that I want to play, meaning if I have a library, let's say I have 10 games, and it's going to play 7 of those 10 games, but I want to play all of those 10 games, and I'm going to have to pull out an old console to play those other 3 games, then the backwards compatibility is useless to me because I might as well just leave the old console out.
Well, this isn't true backwards compatibility. This isn't like throwing a GameCube game into a Wii where every GameCube game is going to play.
Exactly.
This is, we have the license to put some of these on. We're probably giving some... you know, some cutting some check to the developers from back then to allow this to exist for some reason, because it probably cuts into sales, you know, digital sales somewhere. I don't know. But yeah, the Xbox 360 only got up to 385 for backwards compatibility on Xbox One. That's not close to half the library, right? So this is going to be less. How many Xbox games were there? Over 1,000? Xbox, OG, what's the regular? Now, what's the original Xbox? When I put it, when I search for it, do I do now?
This is what I was.
What do I do?
This is what I was.
Fuck you, Microsoft. How do I search for this now?
We always have to abbreviate things. I was just going to say. I mean, luckily we don't have to differentiate between Expo, but I was like, if this was a new system, how would I abbreviate this? Xbox.
How do I search for it? Xbox console. Let's say Xbox. There was. Oh, Pat was actually. Wow, I have Xbox knowledge. There was 1,045 titles on OG Xbox.
Yeah.
So, if this is going to be less than 385, it's not, like I said, then this is not really an emulator, then. This is something else. This is just basically allowing some games to be played, you know, to basically be emulated on it, but it's not emulating, it's not open to every game. So then, if you have all those green-shelled games, the ones you can pick up for 50 cents each at the swap meet, don't buy them to think you can play them on an Xbox One.
It's not true backwards compatibility. What was the last system that had true backwards compatibility?
Probably the
Wii U.
Oh, Wii U.
I don't know how accurate it was, but yes, I think the Wii U.
Sure. Even though it was playing like on a Wii emulator front end, like I booted up into like a Wii OS. So yeah, you're right about that. That's probably closest. Someone probably say that in the order they'll pick out the two games that didn't work on it, but yeah, that's the last one.
Yeah, or the PS3 60 gig, but not the 80 gig.
That wasn't 100%, though. It was
60 gig was about 99.
Yeah, we'll take it. We'll take that. We'll take that, Ian. But I guess Nintendo was the last one to really do that. You know what, Ian? Across the aisle, Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals, we can agree on one thing.
Killing Nazis?
Killing Nazis is a grand old time.
It is. An American pastime.
It's an American tradition. Our forefathers all did it.
And soon...
Frank's dad did it, literally, in Europe.
Yep.
Well, not all Germans were Nazis, but, you know. So, Wolfenstein 2, the new Colossus trailer hits.
Looks good.
And boy, does it look grand.
It looks fucking great.
So, with shows like The Man in the High Castle, which is... I think it's on Netflix. I hear it's great. It's an alternate timeline future where the Germans win World War II. They take over the U.S. So this follows... Wolfenstein 2 follows that sort of time frame where this takes place in... What is it? 61. And B.J. Blazkowicz wakes up from a coma. And he's like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
The Nazis have taken over the U.S. And it's very interesting just because... it's kind of a bold direction to go and to do this and not just, you know, do another reboot and set it during World War II, but you fast forward it, you do it on U.S. streets, U.S. soil. That's an interesting take. You have some robots, that show up. It looks like in sort of high, like the technology has advanced somewhat since World War II. So you get that sort of feel from, what's the feel that does game, is it like Fallout does that sort of feel?
A little bit of Fallout, but it's not post-apocalyptic. It's sure. Dystopian. It's war-torn, but there are still people who go about, you know, living their daily lives. The trailer shows, you know, there's diners up and running and, you know, a guy, you know,
the Nazi officer walks in
and a guy can make him a milkshake. So obviously there's still supply lines and things like that.
What was great was, did you see the full trailer with the TV shows at the beginning?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
How great was that? Like the Lassie kind of show.
Lysel, and then there was the Speak German or Else or whatever.
No, just German or Else.
The
most popular U.S. you know, game show.
Oh.
Just great. And there was like a Leave it to Beaver parody.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a robot Nazi dog that helps out and breathes fire. You know, first you're watching this. I can imagine being at the event and being like, what the hell am I watching during the first reveal? Then it goes to a weird Nazi cat or some sort of cat that's hanging out, and then BJ wakes up from his coma. And then very violent game, obviously. But it looks like this will be interesting.
I think so. I especially think so, given the current political climate. Apparently there was a lot of people bitching about...
killing Nazis?
Killing Nazis. But
they have to be trolling, because no one could complain about killing Nazis.
You apparently don't spend a lot of time on the internet.
I do, but I just ignore people I think are just unreasonable assholes.
Yeah. Bethesda was taking great delight in it. They had a screen cap talking about it and how in this game you'll be able to make every Nazi kill your own Nazi kill. Make sure every Nazi kill is done in the way you would want to kill a Nazi.
That's pretty good.
I think it's going to be good. I think the story, the trailer, the story they kind of talk about looks interesting. He's got a girlfriend or a wife and kids.
Oh, yeah. So he's got pregnant girlfriend, it looks like, on the way.
Twins.
I love the armor look of the Nazi soldiers.
The soldiers.
It's almost like, not chainmail, it's like plate armor. You know, so it's like I said, it's just realistic enough, like, to push it forward. It's like, they could have this technology perhaps in the early 60s.
There are also scenes where it appears he is killing Nazis from a wheelchair.
I missed that.
If you watch gameplay, there are first-person scenes where it looks like he's wheeling around in a wheelchair killing
Nazis. That's fantastic.
So I'm very, very interested in playing this game.
That's fantastic. And he's just still, you know, we're talking, you know, 15, 16 years after World War II ended, so he's probably like a grizzled 43-year-old B.J. Blazkowicz.
Yeah,
that's how you pronounce it, I think. So it's just interesting, like I said, and this goes back to, we brought up on the podcast briefly last time about Far Cry, people complaining about, oh, this is an allegory for something. No, we're just fucking killing Nazis. Can I do that now? No one said in 92 was an allegory for anything besides killing Nazis. You know, there doesn't have to be ulterior motives for every game theme that comes out, or story.
The day killing Nazis goes out of style is a day that I don't want to see.
Can we just unite around this game?
Please?
If there's one game we can unite about, is there anyone out there that was on the side, living in the U.S., that was on the side of the Nazis? I don't think there was.
No.
I don't think there was. There probably was. There's always...
I'm sure.
There was a few, but I mean in general.
In general.
In general. So we're going to look forward to that, and this comes out... Is this not until next year? Oh, it's going to be October 27th is going to be the release date.
Oh, excellent.
That's going to be a very busy day, which we'll get into why later on.
Yeah, that'll be a very busy day.
Ian, let's talk about...
the return of toys and video games.
Yes.
So, Ubisoft has announced Starlink, Battle for Atlas. And, this is coming out on all consoles, I believe. They really focused on the Switch version.
Which was curious, but I love that they focused on it.
Yeah. I just think they wanted to show their support for the Switch, and I think just the way the Switch controller is designed.
And toys.
And toys. but there's a neat way for them to, you know, hook it up onto the Switch controller. But Starlink looks like the type of game that I would be interested in based on the fact that it's spaceship dogfighting. And I love that sort of stuff. It has a nice look to it. The way the starships and the graphics look. I enjoy what I saw. What's more interesting... for some people, but I think what may turn me off, at least from the Switch version, is Starlink has a modular build-your-own battleship sort of toy system for at least the Switch version. Now, I don't know if that's been announced for the Xbox One or PS4 versions. I would assume that it would be, because that would... It would be silly for them to lose out on money.
Well, do the other consoles have an NFC reader on them? To be able to pull it off?
Well, they could do it the same way they did it with Skylanders or anything else.
Just put an attachment on?
Sell it with a dock.
Okay.
You know, just drop
versus
it.
Versus just being it built in.
Built in.
Which makes it a little bit easier, probably less cumbersome.
It makes it look neat because you got your little starship flying around on your controller.
Yeah, so basically how it works is it looks like you can probably, hopefully, optionally buy pieces for, you know, your ship and then attachments. And as soon as you snap in the attachment, it'll change, like, the weapons on your ship and the loadout, which... That sounds cool if it's in real time, but now I'm picturing myself like looking around my sofa and getting toys and snapping them on my console onto my controller. Well, it is a console if it's a Switch. How would you play it in handheld mode? Well, that's the thing. It has to be optional then, because if it's in handheld mode, how the fuck are you going to pull that off on the plane? You'd be packing 15 toys in your bag to play Starlink Battle for Atlas.
You can just tap it on the joystick, probably.
Well, you're going to put it. The person next to you is eating their food. Be like, "What are you throwing toys on me in the middle of battle?" It has to be optional. For this, otherwise there's no way I'm gonna be able to get this and play this and enjoy this.
Well, maybe not, and maybe
maybe fuck you, Pat,
and maybe that's the game's folly. I mean, they made portable Skylanders games for the 3DS, and as far as I know, they sold like shit, probably because you had to have toys with you when you were trying to play portable games.
Okay, gimmicks aside, that might cost me $100 in extras to buy. I think this looks fantastic.
It does.
And yes, and the joke is that people are calling it No Man's Skylanders, which just aesthetically, it looks like No Man's Sky.
Yeah, it does.
But this is a game I will play instead of No Man's Sky, because I actually wouldn't mind a story, and I wouldn't mind actual dogfighting to occur regularly.
Well, it looks like it occurs all the time, so that's pretty nice.
Yes. Just from the trailer, though, I had to see more gameplay, but from the trailer, though, it looks like most of the dogfighting is on planets, which I don't mind, but they do show it in space. I prefer most of it in space, but having even a combination is great.
Yeah.
To do that. Now, I guess we'll see what happens. Fall of 2018. So this is really a reveal trailer. And this is like, we were just getting into this shit.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they're focusing... Well, Ubisoft always had nice support for Nintendo. They never totally kicked them into junk like, EA has done in the past. And now Capcom, which we'll get into to an extent. But so it looks like you have... Let's see. Travel seamlessly through the exotic alien worlds of the Atlas star system. Each one of its planets has its own identity, ecosystem, and wildlife. Be careful, as space is a hostile environment. Yeah, we know that. All right. The world evolves depending on your actions and your choices. Everything that you do has an impact on your journey. So, this goes back to the argument between total open world, no story, it's just a clusterfuck, No Man's Sky, which, yes, you can enjoy it, but not having any structure could damage it, versus this, semi-open. There's some structure to it, but you still have some choice in what you do, you know, sort of a privateer sort
right.
of game, which is what I always prefer, or something like Star Citizen. This is a simple Star Citizen game, a very simple Star Citizen, but this will actually come out probably before Star Citizen comes out fully. So there you have it. So I think it's something to look out for. Again, if I am able to play and enjoy the game the same way without buying trinkets and toys and without charging me the same way to get, you know, the upgrades to my ship, I'll be on board for Starlink Battle for Atlas. Ian, Nintendo had a big E3 showing. You could say they won E3, which I won't say because I hate saying anyone won a trade show event.
Yeah.
But you could say they had a good showing at E3.
They did. For the first time in years, they probably had a pretty good showing. I'll go through some of the smaller stuff, real quick before we get maybe into some of the meatier things. Rocket League was confirmed for the Switch. That's
pretty damn big.
That is. It's an older game, and it's on, you know, other platforms, but, Rocket League for Switch, I believe, was confirmed for cross-server play.
Yes.
Which is huge.
For PC, I think they said Xbox, and then Sony, they said...
No, Sony actually...
did they come on board?
We didn't really get into Sony much, because really, Sony was... Sony wasn't really baffling like Microsoft was, but it was just completely unexciting and boring. And then they also, like, they killed the idea of cross-platform play. At their conference. Sony was like,
for
nope.
All games?
They're just like, we're not doing it.
They're taking their ball and going home?
Yeah, they're being a bunch of fucking shit bags. So,
they showed off a Spider-Man game that's exclusive. Or timed exclusive, whatever the fuck they call it nowadays. Yeah. Console timed exclusive.
So, but at least you'll be able to play with your PC friends or your Xbox friends. It's cool that Nintendo's doing that.
But it's portable.
Yes, but it's portable, which is huge. And it should give you the exact same gameplay experience, and it's obviously a game that's not going away. Anytime I turn on Steam or the PS4, I still see a lot of my friends playing the hell out of Rocket League. So that's a good get. Xenoblade Chronicles 2, we knew that was coming. They showed off more of it. It looks fantastic. That is obviously going to be a huge one. But the new Kirby game, a new co-op Kirby game...
looked adorable.
Yes. All back, Kirby back games look adorable.
You know, platformer, right?
Yes. And it'll probably play similarly, I'm assuming, in the same vein as Kirby's Epic Yarn.
Okay.
Which was also co-op available.
And speaking of Yarn, you got a Yoshi game.
There is a Yoshi game, another Yarn Yoshi game coming out. With how much I adored Yoshi's Woolly World, I'm really excited about this one. Pokken Tournament DX or whatever, the evolved one, was announced prior to E3, and people were upset that they announced that the new Ultra Sun and Moon were going to be for the 3DS, but it has been confirmed that they are working on a new core Pokemon entry.
RPG, right?
RPG.
But they didn't say that during the conference, though, but they said it afterwards, right?
They did. I don't know if they said during the conference.
I don't think it was during the conference.
Probably not, but they did confirm it.
Because people were probably going to storm the booth and kill everyone if they didn't get a proper, you know, game on the Switch, proper Pokemon game.
They did announce more Zelda DLC.
That was interesting because they confirmed, like, the, you know, the second part of it, like, what you're going to expect the storyline, what had to do with the, what are they, the four, the hell are they called? Four heroes?
The boss baddies.
The boss baddies that are your friends, right?
Yeah.
Four champions. Champions. The champions ballot. They're champions. And your friends and your pals.
A couple of the... So this is the difference. The Nintendo one has so much to run down. Some of the bigger things, though, that were announced, and I think the things that surprised people... I'll start with the Mario and Rabbids game actually looks good.
Didn't really check that out too much. That was more part of the, part of the Ubisoft presentation?
Looks like XCOM.
Oh, really? I didn't even see it. Wow, that's, where, XCOM?
Yeah.
The original XCOM.
Looks like XCOM.
Okay.
Looks like an XCOM game, basically. So, I'm pretty interested in trying this, and, I think...
As people do yard work outside, apparently. You keep talking, I'm going to close the door.
Yeah, okay.
Keep talking. What the? Is that Frank? Could be Frank.
Could be Frank.
No, honestly, could be.
If it's Frank doing yard work. So, I do think the Mario and Rabbids game has turned a corner where it looks actually interesting to me, whereas I just kind of, you know, laughed it off. initially. And it was touching. Holy shit. It was touching to see the guy, you know, who's kind of helming the project, sitting in the front row, listening to Miyamoto talk about it and, you know, thanking him for his work on it. Because, you know, that's got to be a big deal. And I think we could be looking at a game that's actually fairly decent. So I have hopes for that. And then obviously one of the...
Wasn't Frank, it was one of his workers. Go on.
Oh, okay.
Literally.
And then I think, and we'll get into a little bit more of this later, but I think one of the biggest things is not only was one Metroid game announced, but two.
Let's talk about the first. Let's talk about Metroid Prime 4 getting announced.
Okay. So Metroid Prime 4 was announced. That's huge. People have wanted new Metroid games for a long time, and they've just been getting...
Well, Other M was mixed, right? People were like... Eh.
Well, it was mixed, but regardless of being mixed, that was the last, last one.
2009 or 10?
Probably 2009. I don't know, but it was on the Wii, so I mean...
And Metroid Prime 3 came out in 2007, so it's been 10 years between a proper, quote-unquote, Metroid Prime game. 10 years! And Metroid's not obviously on the stature of Legend of Zelda, but you could say that it's more popular than, like, a Star Fox. Like, people get behind Metroid games.
I've always considered it very much part of the core of Nintendo franchises.
The core properties, of course.
Yeah. So Metroid Prime 4 is announced, and Retro Studios is not doing it this time. It's being handled internally at Nintendo, which makes me very interested in seeing what they're going to come up with. Mm-hmm. Just because Retro handled the first three, and they really seem to have that first-person Metroid sort of gameplay locked down. So it'll be interesting to see what Nintendo does when given a franchise that's been, at least thus far, typically first-person shooter-based, what they'll do with it. Because that's not really their wheelhouse.
Sure. But we're looking at, since this is not even, this is an announcement teaser, you know, this game might come out for at least 2 years. We don't know when this is going to come out.
Yeah, it's literally a picture that says now in development.
Yeah, so this could be the big hit for the medium life of the Switch, you know, like two and a half, 3 years into it, for example. But then not announced during the E3 Nintendo Direct, they announced a surprising title for the 3DS / 2DS / new 3DS / new 3DS XL / new 3DS. Did I ever say that?
/ new 2DS. I don't know.
All the 2DSs and 3DSs.
Yes. Metroid, Return of Samus? Or
Samus Returns.
They've swapped it around. A remake of Metroid 2 on the original Game Boy. I think that, shocked a lot of people.
And why wasn't that part of the... I guess they wanted to keep them just all, you know, Switch games during the original Nintendo Direct.
Actually, I thought that was announced during the Nintendo Direct.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly certain that was. Mm-hmm.
Was it?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, almost was entirely it? Certain okay. that was announced during the Nintendo Direct.
Okay.
Because that was announced first. Huge news. That was the thing that got everyone excited. It's interesting that they're continuing to show the 3DS support. I'm actually one of the people who's not upset that they're continuing to show the 3DS support.
It's a different market still.
They promised that they would show the 3DS support through 2017, and Nintendo's sticking to their word. I think that's commendable.
People have sold so many of these. Why they wouldn't just toss it aside?
People are asking isn't this on Switch? Well, you know, this was probably in development before. There's a lot of reasons why.
Let's talk about it real quick. Look at the gameplay. It's cool. You have the map on the bottom screen, on the top you have the gameplay. That's really, really smart to do. Obviously,
sure.
You have two screens to work with.
And this, obviously, I think, answers why they went after... I mean, Nintendo probably would have gone after it anyways, but this is...
But this is your first prime example, pardon the pun, for Metroid, why they have to go after this stuff.
Yeah, such as, well, why they have to go after the remakes, such as another Metroid 2 remake.
Yes.
And they have to protect their intellectual property. If this was in the works, or if this was something that they had an idea that they wanted to do...
If this is coming out September this year, this was in development when they shut that down. Absolutely. Because
right.
that was less than a year ago they shut that down.
Right. So they had to. My concerns for the game, one major one, is that it's being done by Mercury Steam, who ended up trashing the Castlevania reboot, especially with part with the one that was done on the 3DS. They did a 2D Castlevania tie-in, 2D 3D tie-in,
okay,
to the console relaunch of Castlevania, Lords of Shadow.
Okay.
And they also, I believe, they were the ones who did the part 2, which was not favorably reviewed, and they also did the 3DS game, which was fucking trashed. I mean, panned. And they're in charge of this game. So that could potentially not bode well. And, you know, if it doesn't and it doesn't sell, that's only bad for Metroid fans. So my hope here is that Nintendo's not just schlocking something out that's going to suck to keep them happy. It shouldn't be hard to do a good remake of a game that was already pretty damn decent to begin
with. Sure. I mean, yeah, I'm looking at it. There's like small mini cutscenes in here. It's going to be obviously 3D. You have the map system there. Yeah, if you're building on a game that's beloved already, you know, in a franchise that it's all laid out for you, just updating graphics, it is kind of hard to screw it up. It's laid out for you.
Should have been hard to screw up Castlevania.
Sure. But being that they had almost an hour of footage shown, yeah, this has been developing for a long time. This isn't something they just thought of after seeing that remake.
It comes out. Obviously, it comes out in September. So.
Yeah, so this is just about done. You think if they're showing that it's 50 minutes, this is probably just about completed, you know, for the most part. So that's a surprise. It gives, you know, maybe this is the one last hurrah for the 3DS in terms of Nintendo first-party stuff, where it's like, okay, here you go. We love ye 3DS. You guys have helped us be our most, you know, successful. Is it the most successful handle for Nintendo? Was it 3DS?
Yeah. I'm almost positive it was.
Standing on its own iteration, including the five subgenre types or subtypes of it. But yeah, you know, good seven year run for the 3DS, right? And they'll probably still have some games next year as well.
Yeah.
That'll probably close it out.
Yeah, probably some JRPGs that'll trickle down.
So it'll be the JRPG handheld. We'll look back finally in 20 years. We'll do our hidden gems of the 3DS slash new 3DS slash 2DS slash new 3DS XL and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Ian, we've spoken about Nintendo at E3, but have not spoken about why Nintendo won E3.
Oh, my God.
I hate that. I'm cringing. But the biggest killer app Nintendo has revealed so far for the Switch, coming out officially October 27th, earlier than what anyone anticipated, Super Mario Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
And the one gameplay mechanic revealed at E3, which none of us really foresaw coming, was the ability for your demon Cappy hat to have Mario basically inhabit the souls of enemies and other characters in the game and take them over, which is really unique and it's really cool.
Including dinosaurs.
Yes, including a T-Rex. That's how the trailer began and ended.
It did.
And just from that mechanic alone, I'm like, wow, I want to buy this. This isn't just like Super, this isn't like Mario 64 Part 2. They added a whole new element we have not seen before. Like, if you want to play as a Goomba and do whatever, you can do that and stack them up. You know, if you want to be a bullet bill Mario and fly around and accomplish, I guess, certain tasks, you can do that. You know, there was a cheap swimming Mario. It's so cute with the lips and the mustache. I mean, it's adorable.
Yeah.
It's demonic, but it's adorable.
Watching Mario possess another human.
Yes, that was weird. Need some exorcism action going on.
Watching what is ostensibly a human character.
Yes, there's humans in New Donk City.
possess a real human? I that part made me That hurt me.
But it's intriguing,
yeah.
Isn't it?
It is.
You also got to figure out why Mario's not a real human, but he's somewhat of a human. Like that's another story. But interesting that from the gameplay they showed after by the way, that trailer was fantastic. That theme song is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like sort of like a 50s jazz swing thing going on.
Yeah. It's great.
People were asking Breno Floss to do a Super Mario Odyssey with lyrics, and he's like, it exists. It's a theme song, has lyrics. So
yeah.
You have a Mario song with lyrics. That's fantastic, right? But New Donk City, I feel like saying either New York or New Jack City whenever I say that. Pauline's the mayor.
Yep.
Good to see Pauline make a comeback. I thought she became a stripper on Long Island, according to a certain NES guidebook, but she became mayor of New Donk City.
She was actually in a bunch of DS and Game Boy Advance games.
They brought her back.
In the late 2000s.
They brought her back. But she's the mayor, and I guess Mario's tasked to do certain things to help out there. But that's also, I guess, the jump-off point with your ship to go into different lands.
Yep.
And travel across the world and get adorable outfits all with cute little hats.
Yeah. And it just looks... every part of that game is something that I want to play in. And the amount of openness for puzzle solving in that game... just looks inherently huge.
This is the most open we've seen a Mario game.
It is. Yet I expect there will still be, you know,
tasks and puzzles,
some structure to it.
Sure.
I hope there is because
it's not going to be GTA.
It may lose me, unfortunately, to a degree if it's too open. But I'm very interested to see what the focus is on puzzle solving in this, because with Mario's cap, it looks like there's a lot of, when you watch the trailer and when you watch gameplay, there's a lot of moments where he's entering a bullet bill and then entering something that's jumping upwards and very quickly doing all of these transitions to get to places or to make things happen. And I don't think it's necessarily, I'm sure there's going to be lots of areas that are free running and, you know, fast platforming, but there's also going to be a lot of moments, I think, where you have to stop and look around and say, you know, how the fuck am I going
to
do this?
You have to think a little bit.
Yeah.
You have to use the powers. Like, for example, it looks like you can, like, slingshot off things with the cap and use it as, like, a catapult in some aspects. Besides, yes, inhabiting all different characters. I just think it's cute that so far we've seen, like, Sombrero Mario, we've seen the USA Mario, a couple Baker Mario, but they're all references to past Marios that have existed.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not just amazing, but the fact that they have that sort of reverence to even do that to, like, Sombrero Mario is pretty obscure, right?
Yes.
What is that from? Like Kix? Who the fuck remembers that, right? And then USA Mario is from one of your favorite NES games, NES Open Golf.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Baker Mario from Yoshi's Cookie.
Yep.
So. Damn, I love that. I just love that.
Yeah.
I just love that. They didn't have to do that.
No.
But they did it. They could have had Mario dress up as any other, you know, red, white, and blue character for that part of the world. But they didn't. They had enough thought to go back and say, okay, let's see what other various outfits we had him as before. You know. What other types of ones had they revealed besides the wedding Mario in the top hat? Are those three they've revealed so far?
I can't remember.
But it looks like there's like a shop system. You can buy hats,
mm-hmm,
and buy different little items. You can buy a poncho. Looks like in the shop there. And I'm guessing there's different powers based upon what hat you have. It changed a little bit. How about the 2D ones where you transform into Super Mario Brothers?
I think that looks really cool.
Like you're wrapping around the tower, but all of a sudden you're just jumping around. But then you transition back out into 3D Mario instantly. That's pretty cool.
I also think it's important to note how organic all the landscapes kind of look in Super Mario Odyssey. The game doesn't look as building blocky. The city looks like a city, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It doesn't look
like they just put assets everywhere and stacked it up.
Yeah, I guess that's
kind of hard to explain that until you see it, right? Until you get
right,
into it.
But when you look at it, it doesn't look like a traditional Mario game. It looks like you're doing platforming in a more organic city environment. In the other areas as well. I guess it's harder for me to put it into words exactly what I'm trying to say, but the game has a more realistic
it looks lived
look
in?
To its structure, okay. And it looks lived in, but it doesn't. It's not like it does away with all the eye candy or anything. There's recognizable Mario things. It looks pretty. It's not like it's realistic, but I feel like the structure of the game looks also more realistic at points.
I just like the fact that also you'll be dispatching enemies in a variety of ways with the hat.
Yeah.
So it's not just jump on enemies or throw a bomb at them, you know, like. They'll probably come up with inventive ways to, like, slingshot things at him or to ricochet things back at the enemies or just hit him directly with the hat. I like that. And you'll probably still be able to jump on enemies, too, I'm guessing.
Oh, sure.
Of course, but I do like the fact that they're adding that into the repertoire. What about the amiibos, which people are calling wedding toppers? Like, all the nerds are going to buy the Bowser,
oh, yeah.
Peach, and Mario wedding outfit.
Yeah. Vonnie and I had Sailor Moon and Tuxedo Mask wedding toppers, and had those been out, I mean, who knows? We may have used those.
We may have been screwed. We might have a second wedding because of that. What do you think about the T-Rex part? What do you think that's going to be like in that sort of, you know, obviously prehistoric age, Jurassic Mario, you think he'd be fighting other dinosaurs, or
I have no idea.
But the fact that that's there, you're like, what the, like, what is this? This is a Mario game?
It's one of those things that I almost wish they hadn't shown us, because the wow moment when you approach the dinosaur, had you not seen that and go, can I? Oh, I can.
You can throw your hat at anything and inhabit their soul for a time, right?
But, yeah, I mean, seeing that was cool. I have no idea what else they'll show. I will probably go on mostly a Mario Odyssey blackout after this and just wait until the game.
Are you going to treat it like a movie?
Yeah.
You don't want to be spoiled too much? They got to show a T-Rex, because if you can inhabit a T-Rex and just clomp around as a T-Rex, come on, that's every kid's dream.
No, yeah, I mean, obviously.
What game has done that where you can just become a T-Rex if you want and just go around and come back out, become a Goomba?
Jurassic Park Warpath for the PlayStation.
Okay, but
an awful Jurassic Park fighting game.
I always thought it was weird that half those Jurassic Park games, you could just be a dinosaur killing people. Like, I was like, oh, it's more fun just to do that.
Right.
You know. Let's try to see some other highlights. Yeah, you can go inside robots. You can go inside, which I think is interesting. The Cheep Cheep's the cutest thing ever.
Yes.
Going inside the electrical line in order to, like, go to other buildings and mm-hmm. through the hat. It's unique. He's dancing with a guitar. There he is in his cute little wedding outfit. And Princess Peach having piranha plants.
That actually is my favorite thing. I saw that and I lost it. I want a bouquet
Is that dangerous? Can that be dangerous to lose a finger?
Yes.
What do you think you could do by stacking Goombas up? That's kind of weird. It's like your communal Goomba.
Well, they walk around stacked all the time, so maybe they weren't stacked to begin with.
Were there any Koopa Troopas in this?
Yes.
Was it? There was some turtles?
Yeah, it shows him as a Koopa Troopa, actually, which is really cute.
Okay, I'm looking at the gameplay. Maybe it was in the trailer then.
Yeah, it was in the trailer.
I won't be able to wrap my head around what the people will be doing there. I'm guessing there's going to be, like, jokey stuff going on, or they have you do certain quests, or, you know what I mean? It'd be almost like a GTA game where you do little mini quests, or a Spider-Man game where, you know, you have to rescue someone, like, maybe. I don't know. I just think there's enough interest here that I'm definitely intrigued. Now the question is, how many millions of these are they going to sell over the holiday?
I have no idea. This is too many.
I tweeted this will sell not just copies, 10 million additional Switch consoles by itself over the holiday. I don't think that's even insane. That could be even lowballing it worldwide for how many they can sell.
You think?
The public finding out, again, yes, they advertise like new Mario 3D, you know, like on the Wii and the Wii U ones. They didn't really, though, get those out into the public spotlight.
Right.
Enough for the public to be like, oh my god, I haven't played a Mario game since Super Nintendo or 64, here's a new one. When they do that with this game, what's going to be popular, yes, it's too early to tell, but it seems like the Switch is going to be a success from the early going. They're going to sell all the Switch consoles that come out over the holiday. And it comes out just early enough in October that if they wanted to, you could have your Switch Mario Odyssey editions for Christmas.
Yeah.
Pre-packaged on, you know, pre-installed, so they can discount it to $350, save like whatever, $10, and they'll sell a ton of those. Yeah, and they want to put a cute little hat on top of the Switch console, you know what I mean? They'll do some fucking gimmick. I don't know, a Cappy Switch.
A Cappy Switch.
What a cute name. I'm fanboying too much over this Super Mario game, but honestly, I haven't been this excited about a Mario game since I can remember. I just don't. Like, all the one-offs, I never really got to me. like this where it's like, okay, this is going to be something really unique. Like, Super Mario Sunshine here is great.
I thought Galaxy was fantastic.
Sure, I never bought into the concept as much as this.
No,
does that make sense?
This looks really good.
Maybe the Galaxy concept was too far out for me. Literally. I did play it a little bit, never got into it totally, like an Odyssey. I don't know. Ian, we like Loot Crate.
Yes.
You like this shirt?
I do.
It's too late. It was Loot Crate's shirt last month.
Damn it.
But if you want to get the June Loot Crate, there's still time. You have until June 19th to get the Alter Ego Loot Crate. And that includes Spider-Man, Transformers, the Hulk, and DC Comics, including characters like Harley Quinn, maybe Batman. And then you also have maybe minor characters like Booster Gold and Blue Beetle. Probably not, though, but I like those characters. So go to lootcrate.com/Pat. Enter code Pat to save 10% any new subscription. Again, you have until the 19th of June for the Loot Crate Alter Ego. After that, you have to wait till July. I don't know what it's going to be in July. I don't know yet. You don't know yet. What do you think it's going to be? Summer barbecue theme?
That would be good.
Comes with like tongs and some sauce and a nice nice hat and a kiss the cook apron. I've never actually seen a kiss the cook apron in real life.
Neither have I.
I remember the Married Shoulder one was kiss the cook, kill the wife one, which I thought was hysterical as a kid. But anyway, so Al Bundy would wear that. Anyway, go to lootcrate.com/Pat. Enter code Pat and save 10%. Be the envy of your friends and get your 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/Pat.
Go and do it.
Go and do it now. Blah. Ian.
Pat.
You like Monster Hunter.
I do like
Monster Hunter. We just spoke about Monster Hunter XX Double Cross, which is apropos for this segment.
Yes.
We talked about their one being an exclusive Switch console coming out in Japan. But Capcom had another announcement about Monster Hunter Double Cross.
That it was not going to be coming out in the U.S. Yeah. Ouch. Hurts. So, Monster Hunter World will be coming out for the PlayStation 4.
Sorry. Audio.
Will be coming out.
Didn't happen last podcast.
Good one.
Monster Hunter World will be coming out where, Ian?
Monster Hunter World will be coming out for the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, which is great. And, you know, a return to console in the U.S. It's been a while. I think the last one was Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate for the Wii U. It'll be good to have a Monster Hunter on consoles again, and that reopens it up to fans on the PlayStation and fans on the Xbox, who I don't think really yet have had any experience with it. So that's great. But I think what really brought Monster Hunter back to prominence in the U.S. was it always had its niche following. And it did have a few releases on the PSP, and it did have one release, I believe, on the PS2. But what really caused it to pick up steam here was the original Wii release of Monster Hunter 3 Tri, and all the portable versions. A lot of people see Monster Hunter as a portable game. It did not start that way. It started on the PS2 as sort of a Phantasy Star Online ripoff, but it's always been viewed as a portable game. In Japan, all the PSP versions, the portable versions, that's why it's got a Switch version. They brought them all out over here on the 3DS. They did well. The last one we got was Generations, which I believe was the original Cross. And now they've got it on the Switch. Everyone's excited about it. It would be a perfect console for it because you could have it on your TV. You could have it on the go. It would be extremely great to have this over here for the Switch, especially for the fan base that really cheerled the game over here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not getting it. So that seems to me very odd that the Nintendo fan base that kind of built it up over here is the fan base that is now getting screwed out of an installment in the series.
Double crossed.
But they're bringing out a different entry in the series for two other consoles. I'm happy anyway that I'm going to get to play a Monster Hunter game. It's just weird to me that the one that they're omitting is the one that already has ostensibly a built-in fan base that's
sure,
waiting for it.
And localizing a game isn't like they have to make a whole new game.
Right.
So what's going on?
I have no idea.
Why does Capcom now hate Nintendo?
Well, and it does seem like they do.
It seems like they're taking shots here and there, right? No Mega Man collection on the Switch, which makes no sense at all.
Right.
You know, like, what's, like...
That's odd.
That's really odd.
So, yeah. Now there was an announcement yesterday because Capcom... I can't remember which Capcom account it was. It might have been the main one. I've got a screenshot of it on my phone that maybe I should just pull up real quick.
Well, Ian does that. The Switch version is going to support online cross-platform play with the 3DS game. Players can also transfer their save data over from the 3DS release to the Switch.
Ah, so the official Monster Hunter account yesterday tweeted, just to clarify, in response to GameSpot's tweet, Capcom confirms they're not bringing Switch version of Monster Hunter Double Cross to the U.S., and then Monster Hunter's Twitter account screen capped that and said, just to clarify, our official response is we have not announced any plans to localize Monster Hunter Double Cross at this time. Which I think is them trying to stem what they did not see being
that got
quite some backlash.
They don't see their... They have their sales figures in North America. They know what they've sold.
Yes.
They didn't expect that to happen. Have the other games that have come out, has there been a large gap between the localization? Or are they usually...
I believe there was a pretty big gap between generation.
Okay.
There is generally a larger gap. But as the series... I don't know how well Generations sold.
Okay.
I will say that for Ultimate and 3 seemed to always be constantly in demand at the store.
So people were constantly just like, yes. You have it in, you have it in.
Yes.
Monster Hunter X, let's see what that sold.
I think that would be Generations.
It sold, that didn't sell well in the U.S.
Okay.
So it sold 2.8 million in Japan, which is 81% of the sales. And then in North America, 0.32 million, which is 9%. Europe, 7.4. So what was the one? That was the latest one?
That was the latest. The
so other one was... by that, maybe they're thinking, all right, if we sold 81% in Japan, maybe it's not worth our time. That's nothing to sneeze at, though. The other rest of the world was 500,000 copies. That, to me, seems enough to localize it in terms of cost.
Sure.
I mean, what would you think it would take to localize this? Is there a lot of dialogue that they have to then dub over? Is
not exactly a lot of story dialogue, but a lot of, like, item text.
A lot of item text, but that's nothing.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of it,
sure.
Isn't it? Take, a few weeks to get that in there? Come on.
I don't know.
You can do it.
But here's the thing. If it was sales that they were concerned about, then why would they be bringing Monster Hunter World over for PS4 and Xbox One?
Touché.
If they just didn't think the property was viable, then they wouldn't be bringing over the console version.
So maybe this will come over later, but they don't. Maybe they're hedging their bets. All right, so let's see. It looks like Monster Hunter X came out November 20th, 2015. It didn't come, then Monster Hunter Generations came out July 15th, 2016. So, and that was the same. Let's see, release history, and that was the last one, Generations.
Yeah,
and that was the same as Hunter X, or the next. That was the last one.
Generations, I believe, is X. Double Cross is the newest entry, and we never got it.
Okay, so there was a gap of 8 months in between release. So maybe they'll announce it when they get closer.
Possibly.
All right. I hear great things about the series. I'm not too familiar with it. But to me, it would make even 500,000. It would seem sense to bring it over, and then plus, you know, we're talking about the Switch, where if they market it right, maybe they would do more than that in North America.
Well, especially right now, I think now's a sweet spot for any company to take a chance on a game.
Because
over
Nintendo
here.
Might push it more.
Well, because Nintendo might push it more, and while there aren't a billion titles out there, the opportunity is ripe to get new players.
Sure. Let's talk about some retro news that sort of came out of E3. When I went to E3 in the past for retro news, it was, you know, you had your new old-style consoles, your handheld Super Nintendos, things of that nature. Mostly Hyperkin and Retro-Bit stuff. You know, you had, like, your new Super, you know, new N64 controllers that were made, that were coming out, wireless stuff, things like that. But here we have the Retron 77, Ian.
Yes, indeed.
And this is a curious one to me. It's by Hyperkin. It is a seems to be an emulation based Atari 2600 / VCS, which is the same thing, depending on how you do it. Has a mock sort of 2600 wood grain and paneling, which is really cute, angled on the side. It has an Atari 2600 style switch for looks like for on off, and then there's two other tab buttons for switches. Now, off the top of my head, on the original, you know, six switcher, you had what? Power, reset, game A, B, difficulty, black white color. What was the sixth one? I forget. But they went down to four, and how many do you really need, though, on an Atari 2600? You really need A and B and difficulty, right? The rest you can reset through emulation, you know, things like that. And you don't need color black and white anymore. That could even be set up in emulation.
Sure.
So from the looks of it, though, there's only three out of the six original switches that are on here. You have your standard Atari 2600 ports. That's, like I said, that's been standard on Retron 5 and other systems. That's cheap to do. And we have to see, I guess, the GUI interface. But there is going to be save states, and there is going to be the option for 16:9 aspect ratio or the normal 4:3. I cannot imagine wanting
Why would you want to play an Atari game? Any game. But
it pisses me off when I see an NES game in 16:9. I don't know why you want to stretch out playing Pong. Or Enduro Racer, or any other your $10 random Atari cart games.
Yeah,
I love you, Atari Age, but you're a little bit off on how much demand these common as dirt Atari games are. Anyway, so what's interesting though is the fact that it's coming out at all. I think is interesting, but the price point is $80 on this. So, what's your reaction when you first see this news of something like this being announced? Is it a surprise you, being that you have all the HD? By the way, I think it's going to be 720p, I believe, the output. But what's your reaction when you see something like this announced?
I mean, I actually think it's kind of cool to a degree. People want easy ways. People at this point, no matter what you tell them or how they try to hook things up to the TV, people are getting more and more frustrated with trying to hook up old systems to new TVs, even though there are ways to do it. They really just want to be able to plug something in and go. So the fact that that Hyperkin's got these coming out, the fact that these mods exist, etc., etc., I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's pretty cool. The Atari has shown some resurgence of interest. I've said that for the past couple of years on the podcast, and I think that this does have a place in the market. I find the $80 price point very weird, and
it's a little high, especially since the HD Retron NES one is $40.
Right, and I think
he's calling me. Jesus, if that's Frank, I'm gonna.
Go on. Okay. So, the price point, I think, is odd, but I think that probably has to do with what the hardware contains. NES HD that Retron put out doesn't have the save states and things like that. It's not using emulation, so they were probably able to do it for cheaper. This is using save states and other such things, which means there's got to be some sort of emulation in there, which is probably a reason why the cost has risen.
Frank's here. Go on.
Okay, which is probably why the cost has gone up on this. By double, though, I think it's strange, and I think people are going to in a store look at these two things by the same company in the same box and go, why is the Nintendo one $40 and why is the Atari one $80?
It could be scale. They could be trying to recoup their costs because they realize that the market for an HD Atari 2600 is so much lower than an NES. 10% of the people. You know, like, if you wanted to go out of your way to mod an Atari 2600 or 7800, which we'll get into that if there's going to be 7800 compatibility, you would have done so in the past 10 years. You would have done that. You know, like, if you really wanted to get it done, you could have got it done
right
then. So this is going to spur the imagination of people like me who never would get an Atari 2600 modded, ever, you know, because I don't like it enough. But now, wait a minute. I do like Atari 2600 enough to want to still play it, though, every once in a while. But then I said again, 80 versus 40. Frank, come here, Frank. Say hi real quick.
Hi.
Frank making a surprise appearance on the podcast. Just put your head in front of that camera right there without hitting it down. There you go.
Everything.
Hi.
Hey, Frank.
Hi. Ferguson. Frank, how you
doing? Frank, we're talking about an Atari 2600 for the modern world.
I don't know.
You don't know?
The old school stuff myself.
That is old school.
Oh, okay. There it is. See how much I know, but I don't know.
I don't know if the mic's picking you up, Frank, but...
Oh, okay.
Do you want to sit down or no?
No, I'm about working? To go. I got other stuff to do.
Other stuff to do?
Yeah, I'm busy.
All right, Frank.
Have fun, kids.
Thanks for stopping by. Thanks for using my bathroom without asking. Bye, Frank. I love Frank. Anyway, I'll talk to you later, Frank. So that's going to be, I think, something that's going to keep some people from buying it is going to be the price point. That's the first ever Frank Randley appeared on the podcast. But it's not confirmed 7800 compatibility. You might as well throw it in. If it's emulation-based,
do it.
Just fucking do it so people like me don't complain about it. It's the same cartridge slot.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you got to do 5200. I know you'd love it, but no one would want that. But you would love it.
I do.
If 10% of the retro gamers want this, 0.5% would want the 5200 version.
My friend Lincoln and I were sitting around the other night having some scotch, and I just said...
You go close with the monkey?
I said, what did you think it would cost to get a complete set of 5200 games? And he goes... About $1,250. I said, I'll keep that in mind someday if I ever need to go for a full set.
Well, complete your Emerson Arcadia 2001 set first that you said you're going to do. Yeah. All 20 games
all
or so.
20 games.
But the thing about the 5200 is that the controllers, it's not exactly the same as, you know, plugging in an Atari 2600 controller or a Genesis controller.
No.
Or plus, well, this is how
also,
the
it's a completely different cartridge slot.
Yes. But the USB, though, this has a USB compatibility, too. You can more easily emulate a 2600 controller versus an analog 5200 controller. It's a little bit
the finest controller.
The finest controller with non centering analog option, which of course you use all the time in games. Like what fucking games would you need that for?
The true way to play Pac-Man.
The true way. You're not sure which way you're going anymore.
That's how a real person is.
You want to center it yourself every 3 seconds that you're playing. Absolutely. So, you know, is this something you're going to buy? I would think about this at 80.
I want one, but I don't know that I want it at 80.
I think a sweet spot, if they kept it at 40 bucks, like the Nintendo one, I think they would.
Even 50, because while you were gone, what I was talking about is obviously there's probably an increase in price here because they're using some sort of... There's more to it than the NES.
Sure.
I mean, that NES hardware has been... I mean, it's done. They've made
cartridge slots. There's a billion of them.
It's just done.
This is
a bit more new, and it's using some of that emulation technology. But if they could have gotten it down to 50 or even 60, I maybe would have said, okay.
This is the way I'm looking at it. Aren't some of those old flashbacks have a cartridge slot in them? I know it's not HD, but I thought some of those flashbacks had it.
The flashback 2 had solder points for a cartridge slot.
Oh, just solder points.
Yeah.
Okay. Most people though. Would be fine with just getting a flashback, though. Like, if you want to just scratch that itch once or twice, you know, to do it.
Depends on what you want
to
play.
Different market, though. I understand that. But you have the flashbacks, and they retail for what, 40 or 50 bucks, or cheaper, you probably get them. And those have games built in. So I think, it's a promising price point Ian brought up. I think 50 would have been safe. But we'll see what happens. We also have that weird Atari box thing. We're not sure what that's going to be. I'm assuming it's going to be something similar. What else can it be? There's just like a trailer, CG rendered trailer, which we have good history with other consoles.
River West Brands.
No, we're not there yet.
We're not going to get there because I'm fading.
We're not going back there. So we'll look out for this. There's been an Earthbound NES prototype discovered at a yard sale in Portland by comedian Jacob Christopher. Brought to you by our pal, the immortal John Hancock, one of the nicest guys ever, super collector. John Hancock. Found out a yard sale. There's some provenance. The woman who owned the house of the yard sale, that used to be a buyer for Nintendo. So we know it's legit. It's for real. It looks like it was like in a Legend of Zelda gold cart. And John surmised that it looks like it was laser cut, the front of the shell for the prototype. Usually, you know, it's like it was done sloppily.
Right.
This looks like it was done a little bit more precise in terms of the cuts, like circular cuts. on the edge of it. Just to, you know, where you, well, you know, because I got to put the big board in it. It's in a five screw. Looks like Zelda 2 cartridge. So there's been other Earthbound or Mother Zero, if you want to call it, NES games discovered. Our pal Rue owns one of the handful of prototypes out there. What's interesting though is that this is doesn't look like the other prototypes, at least the ones I've seen, where it has, you know, a full cartridge and it has a sticker on it. This is still, even before that, it's just a cutout, slapped it in there. This could be like the earliest prototype.
Right.
I guess we don't know what the differences are yet. What's amazing though is that this shit's still being found. This is just a few weeks ago. This is found at a fucking yard sale. That's insane to me. Absolutely insane. And the fact that this will go for, if not four figures, five figures. It's just, where is it going to end up? Earthbound collectors are nuts. They're insane. So
this is true.
Based, you know, talk to Rue again. So, the Northwest is just a hub for this stuff. This is where all the big Nintendo finds, obviously, you know, Seattle is where Nintendo is based. But I think for the early word is that this will be up for sale at some point. I would sell it probably if I had. I'm not a huge Earthbound guy. The fact that there are others that already exist, I'm not sure how that affects sort of a market value for something like this, because then if one comes up, you might have two or three other people saying, hey, I want to put mine up for sale too. You know, that has happened with other games in the past. The biggest ones being Steam Events. When Steam Events gets found, you put up a complete box when three other copies show up, you know. Or if a Nintendo World Championships comes up for sale, there might be one or two others that sort of slide into eBay, slide into those DMs. You have any thoughts on this, Ian, or I'm just going to ramble about it?
Nope, I have no real thoughts on on prototypes.
No, they don't interest you at all, unless there's something that's very different about it.
It would have to. I mean, I think it's very cool that it's found. What's more interesting about it to me is what you've stated is just the fact that here we are sitting here, and things like this are still being found now. You know, and it goes back to you know, something that we've said a lot of times just about collecting in general. There's no guarantee that what you have is the only one you have. So, don't bank on things, you know, always being worth what they are. But two, it's a very optimistic feeling to know that these sorts of things are still being found. And when I hear stories like this, it doesn't necessarily matter what it is. It gives you that hope as a collector or someone looking for something that you can still find this shit out
there.
Sure,
I would say yard sales / garage sales are the best.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what's going to be there. And even though there's less chance of you finding it, the fact of you finding something that's golden and still being there goes up because there's less people going to a flea market and, like, sellers walking around at 5 a.m.,
right,
for example. Like, if this showed up at a flea market, this would not have been put out before a seller that was there every week would have gotten it. You know, like, there's no way a guy who's a comedian who maybe likes retro games but isn't that's not his business would have been able to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, according to Earthbound Central, there are, and this is back, when is this posted? Like 2010, 2009. Looks like there's at least five known prototypes before this one, including one. It looks like that someone at Nintendo America said one probably exists inside of Nintendo America. Why wouldn't it? You think they would hold on to one? What's interesting though is that this game was ready to be released. You know, this was done. You know, so the fact that it didn't come out, I think is still strange that Nintendo would just pull the plug on something like this. You know, maybe they didn't want it to mix in with the hype for a Super Nintendo version, something like that.
Yeah.
Who the fuck knows? You know, localization issues. We're still waiting on, what, Mother 3 to be localized here, so. And they know that. Reggie makes jokes about that, you know, when he goes to conventions sometimes. They know that. You know, people are hungering for this stuff, and it won't cost them that much to put it on, you know, a virtual console. Like when Earthbound finally came out on a virtual console, and you finally saw the Super Nintendo cartridge prices finally, you know, fall again. So, good on you. Good on you for finding this,
that
Jacob
awesome.
Christopher. And hopefully, you know, you get some good cash out of this. They did go back and speak to the person afterwards they bought it from just to make sure, hey, where are you from? I wonder if she's going to look at me like, oh, did I just get swindled or something? Or maybe, but then again, you know, hey, it's a garage sale. Maybe she has enough money, doesn't worry about it, you know. Ian, we have a scumbag.
Seller.
Oh.
The week.
In multi-parts.
Yeah.
Follow along here.
This is good.
This is have you looked at this before, Ian? Just kind of know what's going on.
Yeah, I have a rough idea here. So this fella,
this is seller Sedona 427.
Sedona 427 was trying to sell a copy of Aerofighters for the Super Nintendo and an Aerofighters manual.
Which by itself is not bad.
No, that's fine.
Ian, what makes it bad?
Well, it's a reproduction.
Oh! You mean it has a reproduction counterfeit label on there, too?
Yeah, that as well.
Okay.
And the manual.
It has a manual.
Uh-huh. And the manual is repro as well. There appears to be false damage applied
to both. To both the label
and the manual.
The manual looks like he literally crumpled it into a ball
and
uncrumpled it. I've never seen a manual look like that before. The creases are too perfect. On it.
So,
but when you look at the label of the game, I've never seen damage to a label where it looked like someone literally took their fingernail and picked it away going around the end of the label.
Yet, hold on a second, wait. It also looks like there's like a burn mark directly in the center of the label. But like,
there is! There's like a cigarette mark right where the cockpit of the plane, or right next to the cockpit of the plane.
So, anyways.
So the description of this auction, where's the description? I just lost it. Here we go. I got it.
Okay.
Bought at my local Goodwill. Don't miss out on what look on. Don't miss out what a deal. Look at pictures. Ask if any questions. Comes with manual. Gameplay's great. Seem to be very rare. No returns. That's always good. No returns due to how rare this game is. So please judge on the pics that are posted. This is the actual game and manual you will be receiving. Good luck. All right.
So
what happens to that auction? It was ended by the seller because the item is no longer available. Because someone probably said to them, what the fuck are you doing?
So we get a second listing.
Second listing. Listing number two. The second listing says, SNES Aerofighters SNES Super Nintendo Video Game Manual Repro Reproduction. Okay?
All right. Then it says, yeah. So that's the second one.
And it says, this is a reproduction. A reproduction game, which means it plays and looks great, but has a ROM chip inside.
After taking to a local game shop, don't miss out. What a deal. Look at pictures. Ask if any questions. Comes with manual. Game plays great. Please judge on the pics that are posted. This is actual game and manual you'll be receiving. Good luck.
All right.
All games have a ROM chip inside.
I just don't understand. What is the... After taking to a local game shop, so is he saying that the game shop told him that this was a reproduction? He honestly didn't know?
I don't know.
That is strange. So that listing was ended because people were like, what the fuck are you doing? Probably again. I'm still just don't get over the fact that he first of all, got it out of Goodwill. Probably didn't happen. I'm gonna guess, my opinion, probably didn't get it out of Goodwill. What are the odds of a beat-up, cigarette-burned reproduction Aerofighters and manual that was crushed unnaturally ends up at a Goodwill and then bought? I don't know.
None, I would say.
Okay, you're going to go and say none. I'll say 1%, all right?
With the manual is the part that seems fishy to me because I feel like the manual would get separated. But
that's only the second auction, Ian.
Yeah. Then there's the third.
There's the third. You want to take it away with the third?
I'll take it away with the third. Let's pull this up here and... Yeah, SNES Aerofighters SNES Super Nintendo Video Game Manual Only Rare Look.
Rare look?
Rare look. Got at a local game shop. Don't miss out. What a deal. Look at pictures. Ask if any questions. Comes with manual only. Please judge on the pics that are posted. This is actual game manual.
I'm going to ask you not to close that because when I clicked on the link, it was already removed.
Yeah, when I tried to click on the first one again to check the end date, it was removed as well. So,
okay, no one closed
these windows.
No one closed these windows.
Okay,
because I'm on a buy it now where there was one bid on May 31st and it sold. Don't close your window.
Okay,
All right? This is like, uh-oh, this is bad. This is happening as we speak. I'm not sure. Okay, the relisted one, is that gone? Okay. I have the first and second link. You have the third one.
Yes.
So before, take a snip of that screenshot of the entire thing before we're done with this, and I will not close this down. This is Scumbag Summer of the Week history where stuff's getting eliminated either by eBay or the lister right before our eyes. By the way, they tried to get $200 by it now originally for the Repro Aerofighters and manual that was fucking put my mouth chewed up and spit back out. So I'm guessing this is just bad. It's just badness. It's just badness all around. So this is what is the name of this person before that it's gone? Sedona 427 for trying to pass off and saying you got it from multiple places and probably putting damage of your own on this Aerofighters with your fingernail and then weirdly crushing the manual. Sedona 427, you are the scumbag.
Selling
of
the week.
Painfully. We got one more topic on the CU podcast.
Do we?
We got some voicemails.
Oh yeah.
So if Ian, how tell people how they want to send a voicemail message or question us. How do they do that?
You go to the Patreons and you sign up.
What's the Patreon URL, Ian? Patreon.com.
I'm sorry, my headache is like killing me right now.
/CU podcast. And you sign up for the tier there, and you could
there's a phone number.
There's a phone number. I'm not gonna give it away because you know it's a Patreon perk. And you'll leave a message for us, and we'll answer your questions on the next CU podcast. Please be polite and respectful, and please actually be from the Patreon. Identify yourselves. We can double check, or you know, I can just put your number on blast to the whole world. I won't do that unless you know.
God,
you forced my hand, but you know I'm a nice guy. I wouldn't do that. Would I do that, Ian?
Maybe.
Okay. So here's two questions. This is the first message from the Patreon CU podcast line.
Hey guys, this is Rich from Atlanta. I'm a casual gamer, play mostly with my retro collection, aside from a few newer games on Steam. But I'm in the market for a handheld, and I'm debating between a 3DS or a Switch. Do you think it's worth jumping right to the Switch and skipping the entire 3DS library? Appreciate you guys. Thanks.
I would say that there's still room to get a 3DS and have it as your handheld.
I would. I mean, if you're only going to get one, I would honestly say go with the 3DS. Especially if you consider yourself more casual. If you play with, you know, just some Steam games and, like you said, your retro collection. But you want a handheld for travel. I mean, the 3DS is at such an insanely good price point right now.
Yeah, even if you just get a regular 3DS XL, not even get the new 3DS.
I would say the new 3DS features are worthwhile, but like with that new 2DS coming out, or you know, the prices on the used new 3DSs, I would say get that and reap the past 7 years of just fucking excellent titles they've put out for the 3DS, especially because they're only getting cheaper. The Switch is a great system. I love it. But for, I think, what you would enjoy, you're going to have to wait a couple of years to go out and get those, you know, bargains on used games and things
sure.
like that. When you could really go out right now, get a 3DS and go to garage sales, flea markets, heck, any local game store or GameStop and buy like 10 titles for, you know,
sure.
and be set for a couple of months. I don't think there's any need for everyone to rush out and get a Switch.
We're going
to
advertise for Nintendo right now. Nintendo's selling directly on eBay refurbished new Nintendo 3DS XLs in black for only $160.
There you go.
That's what they usually go for, like $200 at least at
a
this
new
point.
Nintendo XLs?
3DS XL?
If they were new, it'd be $200.
So there you go, $160. That is half the price of a Switch. And honestly, the Switch ain't that portable. It's like, yes, it's portable, not portable enough that you could like put in your pocket and like go on a train with. It's like it's like portable enough for a plane if you can put it in a protective case and then put it in a backpack. Not portable enough that you can put it somewhere unprotected. That's the big difference. So it's semi portable. It's portable with caveats to me. So to me, I still look at the Switch mainly as a home unit that has portable capabilities. That's how I sort of look at it. That's how it's kind of branded, even, for a good reason.
And I'll cheerlead the 3DS forever. So
yeah, and plus the back library of the 3DS and slash DS mm-hmm. is incredible.
Oh, yeah, you get all the DS
yeah.
stuff, too.
I said, incredible. Or hell, I would just say, go for the original DS Lite and play Game Boy Advance games on it. That's what I would do.
You could do that.
You can just do that and have a ball. Thanks for the question. And here's the second one.
Hey, Pat, Ian, this is Chris from Ohio. I met Ian in February. I'm glad you guys enjoyed the stuff I sent. Ian said he enjoyed the beer when I met him. I saw the Pac-Man pop, and I saw
Pac-Man.
Ian tweet about the Godzilla I sent the first time last summer. Well, I'm glad you guys enjoyed the stuff, and thank you for all the great programming. Bye.
Well, thanks, Chris. Oh, he sent me a Pac-Man pop. That's not the pop.
Yeah. No,
I do have the pop, though, out there.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
And thank you, Chris.
He got you a beer?
Oh, yeah. He sent me two cans of beer.
Two cans of beer?
Yeah. It was in one of the packages.
I don't know if you're allowed to send alcohol through the mail. Yeah. Are you? Yeah, sure you can. Wine clubs, you can do that, right?
We figure it out.
You figure it out?
We figure it out.
You figure it out?
Yeah.
So, Ian, where again could you ask us a question at?
The CU Podcast Patreon, which is Patreon/CU Podcast through the Patreon tier.
Patreon.com/CU Podcast. He almost got it.
Look,
he's in a lot of pain.
I'm out right now.
You toughed it out.
I'm done.
This was our E3 podcast. Ian will be appearing with me at Game On Expo.
That will be. I am excited.
And that's going to be in Phoenix, Arizona, August 11th, 12th, and 13th. I will be at Too Many Games, unfortunately, without Ian. That's going to be the 23rd through 25th of June in Pennsylvania. And then I will be, in July. Austin, Classic Game Fest, July 29th and 30th. I have a certain NES Guide app, a certain NES Guide book at ultimatenes.com. Ian's still here, barely. He's chugging. He's looking at me with either disgust or admiration or both. I don't know how Ian looks at me. Ian, say goodbye to everyone.
Bye, everyone.
And oh, by the way, the CU Podcast theme will be on iTunes at some point soon with the alternative edition, which I'll probably put in the beginning of this podcast, just the early part of it, not the whole thing. Ian disapproves of the alternate version. He disapproves of it. All right, guys, we'll see you later.
Bye.